Welcome to It's All Journalism Podcast. My name is Michael O'Connell. I'm here with fellow producer Megan Clougherty.
Hello.
And we're talking today with Zach Green, who is the co-founder of the 140 Elect blog and Twitter feed. And what he does is he monitors the 2012 election on Twitter. He works on social media and politics and puts together targeted Twitter campaigns for political candidates. So we thought it would be interesting to bring him in and talk a little bit about the 2012 election. Hello.
Hi, excited to be here with you and talk about this.
Tell me about 140 Elect. How did you start that?
Well, we've had a company called 140 Dev for as long as Twitter's had an API, about 5 or 6 years now, and we've worked on every type of data collection to do early indicators, starting with the stock market, working with other type of financial companies, sports companies, entertainment companies. And then starting with the midterms, we decided to get into politics. That's always been my background. And we figured this would be the Twitter election, so that we would jump on board.
I like that, the Twitter election.
Yeah, I saw that you wrote that the 2012 presidential election was going to be fought on Twitter. Has that happened yet?
To a large degree, not as much as it could, but a lot of the national debate happens on Twitter. So if there's a breaking story, if there's a controversy, if a campaign needs to get a quote in, if they need to change the national debate in any way, it always happens on Twitter.
Are both sides is equally involved in this?
Different campaigns use it differently. Obama's campaign uses it very actively for any type of message, maybe sending 10 times more messages than Romney's campaign. But it's kind of like a boxing match. Romney kind of goes for a knockout punch, one tweet a day, and Obama's going for endless small jabs. So we'll see what style works better.
Okay. Well, I was going to ask you, who do you think is doing the best at this point? You think it's sort of divided between what you sort of described as jabs and punches?
Yeah, what we're seeing is that Obama will be sending more messages, and overall it will get more reach. But when you look at individual messages, Romney gets more retweets per tweet is one metric. So individual messages from him get a farther reach, whereas Obama's overall messaging campaign is more effective.
Now, who are they talking to? Are they talking to just the media who's following this? Are they talking to their loyal followers? Or are they convincing anybody to change their mind? You know, what's your take on it?
It's hard to make someone change their mind in 140 characters, and people who think that they can are probably using Twitter wrong. Twitter, you'll notice when you use it more that the center isn't really as active as the far left or the far right. So Twitter is much more effective for kind of activating your base and channeling them towards specific goals. And that's what Obama's campaign really does, channeling supporters to take specific actions, getting their friends on board to vote, to fundraise, whereas Romney's campaign looks at it a bit differently and tries to target you all, the press, the media, a lot more, and tries to get a quote in, change the debate.
I mean, obviously, in the last general election, they were tweeting. It probably wasn't to the same degree. Mm-hmm. But do you see a difference in this election as far as being more interactive, like looking for more response as opposed to just constantly throwing stuff out into the void?
Yeah, well, there's really three steps to social media. The first one is a status update. What am I doing now? And that's kind of what Facebook is. You know, you tell your friends what's up. The second step is broadcasting. It's another platform like radio or TV, and you're trying to just send a message out to as many people as possible. The third step is that you realize that it's kind of bidirectional. That because of so many messages and you can really interact with strangers a lot better, there's more engagement or possibility for engagement. But the campaigns haven't capitalized that nearly as much as possible. The best things they've done are really hold Twitter town halls once in a while.
I know that the previous job I had was working at a newspaper in Virginia, and I had the opportunity to talk to one of the social media people of one of the parties. And because I really just want to get an understanding of what they were actually doing. I thought they were doing some really interesting things, sort of talking about their candidate, engaging topics and things like that. But the one thing that she was telling me was that they were really kind of concerned, that, is this going to generate votes? I mean, I think that she said that she found some success in, you know, getting people who were, you know, party loyalists to sign up for events and contribute money. But as far as, you know, turning that into, you know, a success at the polls, she wasn't sure that was something that was going to happen.
Well, just yesterday, the New York Times came out with an article, and I forget who did the study, but they found that Facebook alone turned out 340,000 more votes for the 2010 midterms than there would be otherwise. I'm not sure the methodology or how credible that is, but it is showing that even in 2010, there was likely an increase in turnout. And I think the theory behind that kind of cuts to the core of grassroots organizing and how Organizing for America was founded, the idea that relationships are more important than issues for getting people to actually do something. So I'm more likely to vote because my friends think it's really important, because people in my neighborhood count on me, than because I think that some security crisis in another country is really important, has to be handled in a certain way.
That your college roommate liked a particular candidate, so maybe you're going to give a little more consideration to that candidate than you may would have, because you've got somebody who's almost sort of an introduction.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if it can make you change your mind just because of a friend, but it can definitely make you take action where you might not otherwise. And that's really important for get-out-the-vote operations. That's just where social networks kind of come in.
What you're sort of saying here, do you think that there's more room for that sort of convincing on Facebook than there is on Twitter? Whereas Twitter is quite often just sort of the scree of the crowd going at you, not always as much of engagement maybe.
Yeah, I think that Twitter is more of a mobilizer, an energizer, a way of channeling people who already believe something towards specific actions rather than a mind changer.
As far as the approach to running these online campaigns, do you look for trying to start those conversations among groups, if you will, like you said, like friends and neighbors and stuff like that, as opposed to it just being the candidate throwing stuff out there, which maybe isn't as effective?
Are you asking about using the grassroots from bottom up?
I mean, just sort of targeting and starting a conversation within a group at a local level, as opposed to throwing stuff out on the top.
So a great example is during the Democratic National Convention, was it just last week? Republicans kept trying to buy hashtags. And so what you can do on Twitter is you take a hashtag, which is just a way of kind of organizing a conversation, and you can pay Twitter to promote it, so it'll be on every single page on the homepage, and people will see it. And I think what they discovered is that you can't force conversation on people. You can't buy it. Everyone kind of comes in with equal power and an equal voice. No matter who you are, other people can click their retweet button and kind of share what you have to say if it's good.
Right.
So all that you can really do is try to kind of grow a conversation that's already there and kind of give it some type of coalescence, some type of organizing principle. And so during the DNC, we organized an account. It's called Four More. You can guess that it's pro-Obama, four more years. And the meme was, we want four more years because. And then you give your personal reason, your personal life story. And we've gotten that hashtag, four more years, to trend twice on Twitter worldwide organically, because it's a meme that people already feel, but it gives them some type of organizing principle so they can all kind of write a message the same way and then share, and it goes viral.
Well, it's simple, too. I mean, it fits within 140 characters.
Yeah.
As opposed to making it a complex issue.
And it's nice also because it personalizes it. Because you, on the one hand, it organizes your thought. It says, you know, okay, this is what the topic sentence is. And then you get to bring in your own view. And I think that's one of the nice things about social media, is where people are able to weigh in on their two cents about whatever the issue is. It's, you know, that's one of its strengths, I think. Which is probably a very obvious thing to state.
Zach, tell us a little bit more about sort of how you guys got your start on, as far as the campaign goes, like why you chose to go into politics, aside from it being the Twitter election, which I like. But, I mean, how are you guys working within this framework to promote your business?
Well, it's always been kind of my passion, so that might be more reason than anything. But we've kind of taken every side that you can of Twitter politics, done everything kind of possible. We held the first presidential debate on Twitter last year, where we got Herman Cain, Newt Gingrich, Michelle Bachmann, Rick Santorum, and other people to debate each other on Twitter. We've worked for campaigns in the local to the state to the presidential level for Buddy Romer, who is an independent candidate who's about getting money out of politics. We have 2012twit.com, which is an analytics site that kind of tracks how the election is going. Then we do development and consulting and all types of things.
So you sort of organize, I mean, these politicians and stuff online to get them all there at the same spot and then have that conversation.
Yeah.
I know it's simplifying it a lot, but is that right?
That's what the town hall was last year, yes.
Now, how many candidates are you currently involved with? Or campaigns, I should say.
We don't manage as many active campaigns anymore. Now what we do more of is consulting and act kind of as a vendor. So if they need some type of technology to kind of help them expand their message, then we help with that. If they need help with tracking to see what type of messaging works for their campaign, what type of attacks on the opponent work for the campaign, we help them with that type of strategy. So we kind of try to use a combination of tools that are built on Twitter, metrics to kind of see what works, and then strategy with kind of a knowledge of the political space.
So just reading between the lines of what you were saying, your business is nonpartisan?
No, now we pretty much are working solely for the left.
Oh, okay. All right.
I think it'd be sort of interesting, too, because, I mean, so we're an online journalism podcast,
right,
and we talk about, you know, sort of the future of journalism and the future of technology as it comes to news, as it applies to news. So obviously you guys are operating on the established social media networks, Twitter, Facebook. But are you looking forward to how you can use, you know, Pinterest or Tumblr or whatever, you know, maybe isn't as mainstream, but are you guys advancing in that way?
Well, Twitter's going through a couple of different throes of what type of access they'll give the development community. So definitely after the election, when things calm down a bit more and we have more time, we're going to try to expand to Facebook as a way of getting more reach. It basically gets 4 or 5 times more reach than Twitter will. And YouTube as kind of a source of content. Videos are very powerful, advertisements, speeches, et cetera, for politics.
So do you see yourself more as a marketer or a facilitator, that you're trying to, you know, help with the advertising of a candidate, or are you just trying to help them, like, you know, engage better on a platform?
A little bit of both. So our big project right now is this new site called uniteblue.com. And the idea is to kind of organize the grassroots of the Democratic Party of progressives and then organize them for specific actions. So what Twitter's really good at is kind of organizing the day conversation, whatever it is of the day. And so if you get the grassroots energized and organized, then when a campaign or somebody else kind of needs – they're in the spotlight, then you can kind of direct the grassroots towards that.
One of the services that you offer on your website for a campaign is establishing an opponent parity account.
Mm-hmm.
And you had you did one of Mitt Romney called Mitt R Money.
Mm-hmm.
I assume at Mitt R Money.
Yeah.
So what does this accomplish? What is this? What's the goal of this?
Basic terms, just to tear him down. A lot of Twitter is not so much about building your side up so much as tearing the other side down. Outside of politics, Twitter is largely about complaining, because you get to just kind of say whatever you don't like that's happening that day. And so how that translates into politics is that you get to say what you don't like about the other side. So you'll see on Twitter, if somebody's mentioning you, it might be a bad sign. They're probably attacking you. And so parody accounts have really kind of grown naturally into that space as a way of kind of providing opposition research and kind of capitalizing on any type of mistake or controversy.
But so, they have to be funny.
Well, it's a way to infuse sort of humor into it as well. If you have somebody that at first glance seems to be Mitt Romney or Barack Obama or whoever saying something a little odd, then you realize that, oh, this is a joke. Do you get people who look at that and think it's a real I can't believe that he said this.
That's every once in a while, I might follow somebody and they say, oh my God, I thought Mitt Romney followed me. Thank God it wasn't really him, or something like that. You know, we only switch the O and the M, and the byline of it is that you can't spell Romney without money. And so there's a little bit of confusion that we kind of play off of.
Mm-hmm. And, well, how often do you tweet that account?
That one's one of the more active ones, perhaps even too active. There's always more stuff to say about Romney.
What's going to happen the next couple of months? Do you think that the both sides are going to sort of step up what they're doing on the social media, or do you think they're going to switch to more traditional? You know, we're going to buy TV ads, we're going to put mailers out, things like that. Do you think it'll be a tip? The balance will shift.
I wouldn't expect much new changes this late in the game. At this point, the only question is what they do for get out the vote operations. And there I would expect more innovation from Obama's campaign. They generally are more at the bleeding edge of Twitter, kind of doing more creative things with town halls, that type of thing.
Well, what was it he just did? Was it
it was Reddit.
It was Reddit. Yeah, yeah. I did Reddit. Yep. A couple. What did you think
and
about
surprised
that?
Everyone.
Were you guys involved in that? Or?
Oh, no, we don't. We are pretty much just Twitter right now. But they brought the site down, so it must have been pretty effective.
I think people wanted to see if it was really him.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was interesting. He actually, although there was a lot of coverage of just the idea of using that medium, he said some interesting things on it, such as the fact that he would support a constitutional amendment to overturn Citizens United. Nobody picked up on that, but that's actual content that he was supplying.
And that's actually kind of a sort of something you said there in passing is you know, media picking up on things. People using social media, using Reddit to do something different or some type of different, have a town hall meeting. I mean, is that part of what's going on here as well? Is that you want to have a few bells and whistles and things to draw the attention of the media so that you can have you know, them talk about it on the Today Show or they talk about it on the Evening News or Fox News?
Yeah, and that's definitely one of the most powerful parts of Twitter as a platform itself. I think somewhere around 10% of the population is on Twitter, which is much less than Facebook, but all the right people are on it. Anyone who's politically active and anyone who's in the press or the media uses it. I can go into any type of news organization and you'll see on every single computer screen there's TweetDeck, which streams different Twitter feeds. Sometimes they have two different tweet decks open with, you know, 50 columns.
It's sort of a fast lane to the media in a way.
It's an essential source of content because it's really easy to take a tweet and build an article. And so if something happens, the best way to get your side into the story right away is to send out a tweet and it becomes a quote in every single article about the story before it's written.
Devil's advocate here, though, it can also be an echo chamber. I mean, you're reaching the same – you're reaching informed people who are interested about that topic.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you could argue that they're going to find that information directly from the candidate or, you know, through the different people they follow. So, I mean, are you concerned – obviously, you guys are focused on Twitter, but are you concerned about sort of reaching a larger audience and pulling them in? Or is it more about just directing that message to those who are interested?
Yeah, I mean, well, with the way that the press interacts with – Twitter, it makes it that Twitter is kind of, like I said, 10% of the population, so it's a microcosm of the overall national discussion. But because of that press engagement, there's really a megaphone for that microcosm that kind of amplifies whatever is said there. So you can't, I don't know if you can really watch any cable news show anymore and not see some tweets there or read any type of print organization that has a large digital presence without seeing a lot of tweets kind of built in.
So Twitter reaches the media, which then reaches maybe the more mainstream traditional audience.
Definitely.
Okay.
And we had Ethan Clapper from Huffington Post in here a few weeks ago. And I remember one of the things we asked him a similar question about what the campaigns were doing. What he saw was that he was kind of surprised that over the summer that the campaigns were not necessarily as active on Twitter as that he thought they might have been. And part of it was just this perception that if you screw up on Twitter, then it becomes then it's magnified.
Mm.
And then suddenly you're giving your opponent a talking point.
Mm-hmm.
So very much a controlling the message sort of thing.
Yep.
Is this still like a note that's continuing on?
Absolutely. I think that Anthony Weiner is definitely, a call to all politicians to be careful. And it's kind of hits to the core of most campaigns. There's a huge risk aversion with any campaign, not just on Twitter, but with anything. Because in order to run a campaign, you need to do 1,000 things right. And if you do one thing wrong, your career is over for a lifetime.
Yeah, scream at your victory celebration, you're suddenly not the candidate anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Or Aiken's comment a week or two ago, that's maybe he'll win, but he's probably lost his entire career. So just one sentence and the virality that's now possible makes it that you're never going to be able to move beyond that.
It's always going to be part of your portfolio is whenever mm-hmm. people talk about you, you could do, you know, you win the Nobel Peace Prize, but they'll, oh yeah, he's the guy who said this or that.
Well, in a way though, it also makes it harder to establish that trust. I mean, from a business standpoint, to get a campaign or a candidate to sign on with you because they don't have as much control. Is that part of the business model that you guys have to establish that trust with them so they know you're not going to just throw something out there? Obviously, that would be bad for you guys too, but it could ruin a campaign if you tweet the wrong thing.
Absolutely. Navigating this space has been incredibly interesting, much more than other organizations. And we've learned not to really try to have any type of campaign outsource their messaging. That doesn't work. All that we can really do is provide them better tools, better metrics, better strategy for what they should do. But if you're a campaign and you're making someone else take care of your messaging, you're already in a bad place.
Right.
There's a really interesting site as well that I'll put out there called PolitiWhoops. And it basically means that even if you say something and want to take it back, you can't. So after a tweet gets deleted, they put it on their site and say, hey, they tried to delete this. And so there's been some attacks against Obama, attacks against other silly things that people said that they wanted to take back, and you just can't.
Because you have that, you have to have that transparency. I mean, it's so important.
Yeah, well, that, you know, again, that's it was part of the, it used to be the part of the media's role that they report things and then they would sort of do it out there. But now that it's now we've got social media and that everybody's a journalist, you know, it's everybody's responsibility to keep this message and this dialogue going. Do you think the campaigns will be changing their strategies much up until the elections, or do you think they're just going to be pretty much what we've seen so far is what's going to happen to the rest of the campaign?
The one thing that might be a surprise is what they do on the last week or so. Obama's campaign is really smart in 2008 with text messaging, where on the day of the election, they would send a text message saying, where's your nearest polling place? And so that made it easy for people to know where to go to vote. And that's really Obama. His key right now is that he's winning with registered voters, but pretty much tied with likely voters. And so if he can get out the vote, then he'll likely win. And so that's what you want to watch for in the final weeks or so.
And the only other thing I would think about is that one of the things that they've been talking about is how much money that Romney's raised and also the super PACs have raised. And the thought is that a lot of that money is going to be spent in the final weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they may be going rather circumventing the Twitterverse and social media and going straight to TV and radio, et cetera, and put all their push there. Is there a way, do you think, to respond back? Are they going to have to fight that out in mainstream media, or is it going to be a combination of mainstream media and the Twitterverse?
You can't buy the conversation on Twitter even if you want to. During the DNC, they tried to buy Are You Better Off? And it got a really big resounding yes from everybody on the left. So it kind of, anytime you try to buy a hashtag, the other side is going to jump on board and try to co-opt it. So it's really hard to try to buy the conversation, and chances are it's going to backlash if you do.
You've been listening to It's All Journalism, a podcast about the changing face of media. It is produced by Megan Clougherty, Jolie Lee, and Michael O'Connell. This interview was recorded September 5th, 2012 in Washington, D.C. To find out more about this interview or about the podcast, go to itsalljournalism.com.